From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Lindsay Brolini with the latest. Some medical treatments that were effective against earlier variants of the coronavirus aren't working against the Omicron variant. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports that among the effective treatments, supply constraints and a surge in cases means there isn't nearly enough to go around in Alaska.
After learning he'd been around someone with COVID-19 last June, Josh Walton got tested at an urgent care clinic in Anchorage. He says he wasn't too worried because he's fairly healthy, had been fully vaccinated, and didn't have any symptoms. Yet. The test came back positive. He started feeling it that evening.
My symptoms weren't too bad. I've had much worse fevers. I didn't have, I felt like I was having trouble staying warm, but I wasn't shivering, and I didn't break into sweats. I wasn't aching. I was just tired and cold.
The coughing began the next morning. By his third day sick, he had headaches, too. But he managed to get an appointment for a monoclonal antibody treatment at a clinic in Wasilla. The clinic had him drive into a car canopy for his treatment. A worker in protective gear hooked up an IV bag to his arm, right through his car window. It took about an hour, plus an hour of monitoring time in case of a bad reaction.
Wake up the next day and felt 100% better. Like, completely better. Which was amazing.
If Walton had gotten sick today, it's unlikely there'd be any treatments available to him.
Right now, the COVID therapeutics are a scarce resource, and we anticipate that that will continue to be the case in the foreseeable future.
Jeannie Monk is Senior Vice President of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. You might have heard headlines that there's only one monoclonal antibody treatment that works against Omicron, and it's in very short supply. But as it stands right now, there are four products that the FDA has given emergency use authorization to that effectively treat Omicron. In addition to the one monoclonal antibody treatment that's infused by IV, there are three antiviral treatments taken as a series of pills. Alaska confirmed more than 11,000 new COVID-19 cases in the last week. That doesn't count cases found through home tests. Alaska's latest weekly allotment of therapeutics would only cover 1,300 people. And part of that allotment includes treatments that don't work against Omicron, including certain monoclonal antibody treatments like the one Walton got last summer. The state's sampling indicates that Omicron is causing the vast majority of Alaska's cases. That means the treatments that do work against Omicron are in extra high demand. This situation is why the state has its crisis care committee. It met Wednesday, and it's about to release clinical recommendations for who should get first dibs. Jeannie Monk participates in these meetings.
So the crisis care committee has been reviewing the scientific evidence and trying to figure out what makes most sense for Alaska. What they will do is provide a prioritization of tiers to outline who will benefit the most from this scarce resource.
Monk says healthcare providers generally follow the committee's guidance, which will be largely consistent with what a National Institutes of Health panel published and what Bartlett Regional Hospital in Juneau announced it was doing with the one monoclonal antibody treatment that works on Omicron. You'd think the sickest people would be the first in line, but these treatments are not for them. The FDA's emergency use authorizations actually warn that they may make them worse. These medications are for people with mild and moderate cases at the highest risk of developing a severe case. First and foremost, people with compromised immune systems. Next, older people who aren't up to date with their vaccines. There are more tiers, but in a panel discussion on Wednesday, Alaska's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ann Zink, said the supply is probably too limited to get to them. The federal government foots the bill for these treatments and controls the supply. Singh says the state is working with the feds to get as much as possible.
A lot of cases, not a lot of resources, short period of time, trying to do the most good for the most number of people in the space that we have.
For most people, vaccines remain a safe and much more cost-effective way to prevent severe cases of COVID-19. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
In other news, Juneau's high school basketball and hockey players no longer have to wear masks while playing games. But as KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, lifting that requirement comes with a few caveats.
Juneau School District Superintendent Bridget Weiss granted the exception earlier this week, saying those athletes can instead participate in increased testing. She says the alternative will be available as long as the district also has enough supplies to maintain its test-to-stay policy.
Because our very first priority is keeping kids in school, and our test-to-stay protocol allows that to happen now. Where it didn't before, we don't have to quarantine students when they become a close contact because we have access to testing.
But the change only applies to players who are actively participating in one of the two sports. That means coaches and athletes seated on the bench will still have to wear face coverings.
Conditions change, but for now, even with the increased pace of Omicron working its way through our community, we feel like the testing protocol is actually a better mitigation strategy than the masks, because we will, if somebody is positive, we will catch them earlier.
To play in home games unmasked, athletes will take a rapid test the day of the event. For away games, traveling players will need to test negative within 48 hours of the trip using the more accurate PCR test. Players will be testing 2 to 3 times a week with those requirements, so they won't have to test for each day of practice. These rules apply to both vaccinated and unvaccinated student athletes. The only exception to the testing rule is if a player has had COVID-19 within the last 90 days. John Blasco is the head coach of the Thunder Mountain High School boys basketball team. During Tuesday's school board meeting, he said he supports the change because the athletes can't perform at their best while wearing masks.
I've had players have masks get knocked off and they have to pick them up and catch up to the game. We preach communication. And when you're playing the game of basketball, it's not a simple conversation. It's loud yelling. And every time you yell loudly, your mask falls off.
Blasco says the team did experience a COVID-19 outbreak over winter break, but the spread didn't happen on the court.
It came elsewhere, and we are working to improve mitigation measures off the court. Very unfortunate, but we caught it and we shut down and protected the kids within the program.
During the same school board meeting, member Emil Mackey said he was worried about students putting themselves at risk in other ways during team trips.
Numerous social media posts have been screen grabbed and sent to me and probably others too, of those players off the court taking selfies unmasked in Las Vegas or wherever they're at. And that's a concern because that's a violation of our strategy.
Superintendent Weiss said the district was looking into travel practices and would bring back some rules that were in place earlier in the pandemic, like having fewer students per hotel room. But she also admitted that coaches only have so much control over off-the-court student behavior. In addition to the increased testing for all students who want to play unmasked, weekly PCR testing is still required for all unvaccinated athletes and coaches. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
And after a long weekend of damaging storms, Governor Mike Dunleavy has declared a disaster in some areas of southeast Alaska. It includes the communities of Yakutat, Juneau, Haines, and Skagway, and the boroughs where each city is located. That disaster declaration opens a pot of money for communities, federally recognized tribal organizations, and some private nonprofits to apply for reimbursement for funds they spent combating the storms. Juneau Deputy City Manager Robert Barr says it's also allowing communities to formally ask for support from the state.
I don't know that we will in this case, but in the event of a major avalanche or a major flood, that kind of thing, then we may seek some actual on-the-ground physical hands-on support in addition to tapping into the public assistance funding that's available.
A good example of that type of support is happening in Yakutat, where the city issued a local disaster declaration and asked the state for help. The state sent in the National Guard, who are responding to help the community clear snow and ice from public buildings and roads. In Juneau, Barr says city leaders are still trying to figure out exactly what can be reimbursed.
We've hired contractors to help with trucking snow around and getting it out of places because it's more than we can handle in house. We've completely blown our overtime budget for our own staff.
The city has its own overtime budget, but Barr says costs that came from the storm may be eligible for reimbursement. And they'll also be looking at damage to public facilities, like the flooded River Bend Elementary School. This disaster declaration doesn't cover individual needs, though there could be some trickle-down. Juneau Emergency Programs Manager Tom Matisse says this disaster was declared because Yakutat reached out to the state for help. Matisse says even though help is on the way, in some cases it might take a while. Reimbursement for these types of expenses can take years to come through. A quick correction to a story we aired on Wednesday about Juneau Assembly leaders extending the city's emergency measures that it uses to combat the spread of COVID-19. We reported that under the former rules, emergency managers would remove all restrictions and fully reopen the city once 90% of the community was vaccinated. That is incorrect. It was once 90% of the community was eligible to be vaccinated. Those rules have changed, though. Now it's not clear what it would fully take to reopen because the city will be waiting on guidance from federal and state health officials to decide. This is KTOO News.